I have a friend that was a truck driver. He drove for the Zapata Cattle Company, and they bring cattle in from Mexico, live cattle, for, you know, sale to McDonald's or whatever. And if any of you read the book The Underground Empire by James Mills, The Underground Empire goes into drug trafficking. And it was written by a man who worked with the DEA. There were many people in the DEA who were super frustrated that they weren't allowed to really go into the drug trafficking. They were thwarted out every time. So they, 100 of these people sort of disbanded from the DEA. They were actually in the DEA, but they formed their own unit called the CENTAC Division. That stands for Central Tactical Unit. And boy, they were just going great guns. They were busting people all over the place. And in a case called CENTAC 12 was about Southern California. It was a very big case. 311 people were rounded up in this CENTAC 12 drug roundup. And two of them were from San Luis Obispo. And they ran a little tavern about a mile from where I live. It's called the Sweet Springs Bar. And it was a hangout for motorcycle gangs. Motorcycle gangs were out of Long Beach. And they had connections into Tijuana, Mexico. Tijuana, Mexico, there was a super big drug boss there named Cecilia Falcone. And they used the motorcycle gangs as a distributing network for distributing cocaine and heroin around California, in Southern California. And the Sweet Springs Bar in Los Osos, where I live, was one of the distributing stations. And there was a ranch in Santa Margarita, which is just slightly a few miles north of San Luis Obispo. And this ranch was a cocaine processing factory where they processed coca paste into cocaine. The friend of mine that drove the truck from Mexico with the cattle, he would bring his truck to this ranch and they would give him a $200 tip and say, or $500 tip and say, get lost for a couple hours, we'll load your truck for you. So he'd go down to the cantina and have a few cold beers and come back a couple hours later and his truck would be all loaded up and he'd head back for the border and back to San Luis Obispo. Well, you don't have to be an intellectual giant to figure out what's going on. And he figured out that if he ever got busted at the border, it would be his hide that was going to go to jail, not the people that were doing the drug trafficking. And he swore that there were drugs in those cattle, and also in the trucks, secret compartments in the trucks. I also know some very old-time cowboys. Oh, they're probably in their 60s or 70s now. And they told me that they would watch these trucks being unloaded. And they would, the man in charge would say, cut that one out, and as they unloaded the truck, cut that one out. And they'd cut certain cattle out and send them directly to the slaughterhouse. And if you remember your high school biology, cows have four stomachs. They're called ruminants, and they eat the grass, and then they belch it up, and they re-chew it, and it goes into another stomach. But they could probably haul a lot of drugs in them cows. Another man, in fact, a couple people told me that they saw Ronald Reagan at the Clark Ranch in Chandon, unloading trucks with cattle in them. Now, whether these are the same trucks or not, I don't know. Some of the truck companies that I suspect are Carolina Western or Carolina Pacific, and there's another one, White Ball. I'm not sure about these names. Don't quote me on them, but these are some of the companies that I would suspect are in on this.
Were the Hillman boys involved in it?
Which boys?
Hillman brothers.
Hillman?
Yeah, Hillman.
I don't know too much about that.
They were very active at the beginning of World War II. I took my training there. That's how come I know.
Well, I noticed one thing in San Luis Obispo, right out on Highway 46, just outside of Paso Robles, you have the Arciero Brothers Winery. They got their start in trucking, and they always ran race cars at Indianapolis. And I think the wine company is just another way of laundering some of their money. So I don't know if they're in on it either, but I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, where am I at? There's a Bada Cattle Company. So I was amazed that, you know, when I heard about Bush's Zapata Offshore Oil. And doing some research and checking, I found out that there are a lot of connections between these, mainly people by the name of Reagan and Nixon and Bush. Ronald Reagan supposedly has stock in the Zapata Cattle Company. If you remember, you also remember your history, the offshore oil platforms of the Zapata Oil Company were used to run drugs into, because the fishing boats from Central and South America could unload out on these oil platforms, which were miles out at sea in the Gulf of Mexico. You're probably more familiar with the ones around Santa Barbara. You can see them right from the shore. And they could unload these boats full of cocaine and heroin out at sea, and nobody would suspect.
Zapata still, right up until, 3 years ago, upgraded their fishing fleet and exchanged out for a little bit better aerial equipment to locate fish. And their big commodity is fish meal, which looks exactly like cocaine, any way you cut it.
Anyhow, the drugs would go ashore with the normal work boats, crew boats that took the workers back and forth every day. It works. This has been working since the 50s, and no one ever suspected. The drugs would come in, and guns and stuff would go out. And maybe you don't know this, but the CIA and Pepsi-Cola, Ford Motor Company, these people all sponsored Castro to take over Cuba. Castro was not sponsored by the Russians at first. He was sponsored by the Americans. When Castro got in, he said, hey, you're going to pay my people a decent wage and you're going to pay market price for the sugar. Well, that's when the whole thing turned around. That's when the doodle hit the fan and the Bay of Pigs thing, when, you know, they started training the Cubans to go back into Cuba and retake it. But Pepsi-Cola was one of the big instigators in the Cuban Revolution and running guns. Why would Pepsi-Cola be interested in Cuba? Anybody have an idea?
Sugar.
Sugar, right. There's a 10 or 12 teaspoons of sugar in every can of Pepsi. And in 1960, when Nixon lost the election to John Kennedy, which was a mind-boggler because no one ever expected this upstart to come out of nowhere and win the election, it was completely unrehearsed. Of course, Kennedy wasn't completely innocent in there either. He got a lot of votes out of Chicago. He got the dead vote out of Chicago. Mayor Daley. He made the Republicans angry. He got them angry at him. So he threw all his votes toward. He threw the Illinois vote to John Kennedy. And also Onassis had something to do with that. He told. Joe Kennedy that he'd help put one of his boys in as president. So it was a complete upset to the New World Order. It set the New World Order back many, many years. Richard Nixon was put on the board of directors of Pepsi-Cola. Richard Nixon went to Thailand, I believe, and negotiated for building a large Pepsi-Cola plant in Thailand. If you saw the movie Air America, it was a spoof on sort of a semi-spoof on drug trafficking and stuff out of Southeast Asia. And there was a Pepsi-Cola plant featured in that movie. I didn't see it. Bo Greitz tells me that he saw this Pepsi-Cola plant. This Pepsi-Cola plant never produced one bottle of Pepsi-Cola. It was a heroin processing plant. Yes? Right. Right. The question was, the remark was about cocaine and Coca-Cola. Yes, about the turn of the century, and even I think it was up maybe into the teens or the 20s almost, that there was cocaine and Coca-Cola. I mean, that's why everybody liked it. And I understand that in cigarettes, there's like 200 ingredients, and there's a bit of opium or cocaine in cigarettes, along with things like fertilizers where they use uranium tailings for fertilizer and stuff like that. So all you smokers, take heart. There are ingredients in cigarettes.
Well, they're a little smarter with cigarettes, too. They process the paper, and this is the opiate is put into the paper so that anyone wishing to smoke their own, you know, to get a little bit better product, is not going to get any satisfaction from it at all. So you'll go back to buying the brand name product. And see, let us hook something else together. Guess where Maggie is? She's off being a consultant to the tobacco companies. And I'm talking about Thatcher. Going to get over $1 million a year. She's a non-smoker to consult with. I believe it's Reynolds, isn't it? R.J. Reynolds. It's a small world. Hook them up and you've got a real bunch of Christmas tree lights.
If you remember...
Where have you been, Ray? We're having a good time.
Am I going on too long?
No. There's no way to go on too long. These ones need a dose of reality.
If you remember several years ago, a man named Lyndon LaRouche got into a big jam when he said that the Queen of England was the world's biggest drug smuggler. Well, the English, that's where the royal family made all their money, was on the opium trade out of India and China. And they've been doing it for hundreds of years. And I think Lyndon LaRouche was a little bit off. I think he should have said George Bush was the world's biggest drug smuggler as head of the CIA, the Zapata. Zapata was the code word for the CIA's drug smuggling operation. And he should have said George Bush was the world's biggest drug smuggler and the Queen of England was second.
No, because you can always join a joint venture, you see. And you both get all those wonderful benefits.
Right, there probably was a big partnership in it. Also, I came across some information. George Bush's old club at Yale, the Skull and Bones Club. For initiation, the members have to go and dig up a grave of some famous person. I think George Bush had to dig up a grave of some famous lady author, a poet she was. And they have to dig up bones and bring them back to their Skull and Bones Club. Also, this initiation consists, you have to lie naked in a coffin and allow yourself to be buried for, I think it's overnight or something like that. That's some very satanic rituals. George Bush, back in the 50s and 60s, had a lot of connection with the oil companies down in Mexico, with Pemex and another company called Primargo. A man named Serrano Diaz, who was one of the biggest crooks in Mexico. And supposedly, George Bush also obtained the skull of a man, the Mexican revolutionary Emiliano Zapata. They also have, the club also has the skull of Geronimo, which makes the Indian population very upset. But this is where the name Zapata came from, for the Zapata Oil Company and for the Zapata Cattle Company. And these people aren't really very intelligent, and they keep using the same names, and they just blow their whole cover. It's incredible. So I traced the Zapata Cattle Company to the drug dealing business, to George Bush, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, and this is all happening in San Luis Obispo County. Of course, since the people on the Sheriff's Department and all the local hoods and the local drug dealers, they know all this is going on, they got quite a hammer to hold over the heads of these people, so they can get away with drug trafficking themselves. San Luis Obispo is probably one of the main arteries of drugs coming into the California area. There was a man came to California on a motorcycle about 10, 12 years ago, maybe longer, 15 years ago, from New York. His name was Jerry Schlesinger, and his nickname was New York Jerry. And I believe he was sent out here to organize the motorcycle gangs as a distributing network for cocaine and heroin. You also remember that there was a CIA director by the name of James R. Schlesinger. According to the Hatan, that there is a family resemblance, a family tie between these. I kind of speculated there was, but I didn't know for sure.
No, there's a, yes.
What about, do you know anything about Arthur Schlesinger? Is that part of the same family that was Kennedy's friend?
Yes, not from actually the same branch, but yes, they're all connected.
So whichever way you look at it, San Luis Obispo County is in this up to the eyeballs. Several years ago, I had a friend that I used to come over to my house. Many years ago, I worked for General Motors Proving Ground. I worked in smog control research. And I knew what went on in smog control research and what a forest that was. And people would come over to me and say, can I tell a risque joke? Not too bad. no, I better not. Anyhow, people used to come over to my house and ask me, well, how do you unsmog these cars, you know, to make them run like the old ones used to? So we just changed the carburetor jetting a little bit and the advance curve in the distributor, and then wake these cars up. They'd sit up and talk. And the funny thing about it is when they went in for a smog check, the man that was doing the check and say, wow, this is the best one we had all day. Never figured that out. But this friend came over, and he'd bring his cars to me, and we tinker with cars. And he was interested in target practice and shooting, so we'd go out and do some target practicing. Well, it turned out this man was working with a government agent named Michael Francis Avis. And they were working with the DEA, with the CENTAC division, on blowing a whistle on San Luis people. The lower people, not the higher people. And my friend found out he was working. He wasn't working with the DEA or the CIA or anything, but he just was sort of helping out. I don't know if he's getting any money out of it. He kind of had a cocaine habit himself. And that, you know, he's taking a lot. He was taking his work out and, what do you call it, eating up the profits. But anyhow, he got suicided. And the sheriff's department wrote it up as a suicide. There was only about two lines in the newspaper about it. And in fact, he was a very good friend of mine. I didn't even know he died until about 2 weeks later. I never did buy the suicide thing, so I started checking up on it. And sure enough, many people told me that he was working with this DEA agent, and they discovered that the drug trafficking went into the highest echelons of government. Now, this highest echelons of government in San Luis Obispo County would be Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, and George Bush. And this man, Scott Alexander, he found out too much, and they had to get rid of him, and so he was murdered. And this is how I got sucked into all of this. I started snooping around and asking questions and writing up papers about my friend getting murdered, not suicide. It wasn't a suicide, it was a murder. Along about the same time that this CENTAC operation was going on, this would be about 84, 85, there was a man who also was suicided down in San Fernando Valley, down in L.A. And the alleged assassins were people that were assassins for the Cecilia Falcone organization out of Tijuana, Mexico, who had franchises in Los Osos and San Luis Obispo. This man's name was Stephen Carr. Stephen Carr was, in the mid-70s, was with the Special Forces Green Beret down in Panama. It was called the Southern Command. And if you remember, Colonel Bo Wrights was there at the time. I think he was a major at the time. And he was in charge of the Southern Command, Special Forces. In the Cotolo affidavit, anybody familiar with that? Colonel Edward Cotolo was sent into Panama with a special action team it was a clandestine operation. They were in there to put small radio beacons from Colombia and Medellin in the valleys up to Albrook Air Force Base in Panama so the drug planes could follow these radio beacons and fly under the radar and not be detected. In January of 1976, 30 drug planes landed at Albrook for refueling. In February, 40 drug planes landed. A man named Antonio Noriega, Manuel Antonio Noriega, was there to meet him. This man, Stephen Carr, was an eyewitness. Who was the director of the CIA in 1976? Right. And the people that were working with these drug trafficking planes were there was a man named Michael Harari who was working with the Israeli Mossad, and there was people Thomas Kleins and Edwin Wilson. You know, I don't know if you know about Edwin Wilson, who was in prison for selling C4 explosives to Muammar Gaddafi. And another thing, friends of mine told me that the terrorist or anti-terrorist forces that were trained in Libya were trained by Special Forces Green Berets. They would take their leaves and go to Libya and train these special forces. So it's hard to tell where the CIA leaves off and the KGB begins. So
there's no separation anymore.
Right.
You have more KGB operatives in your CIA than you do Americans.
Incidentally, these agents, Thomas Kleins was a deputy director of the CIA. Ted Shackley was the deputy director of the CIA under George Bush. Shackley would have been director if Bush hadn't have been appointed. Anyhow, these drug planes flew from Colombia, from Medellin and Bogota into Albuquerque Air Force Base, and they went to John Hull's ranch in Costa Rica, which was just below the border in Nicaragua. And if you remember the story of Comandante Zero, who was hired by the CIA to start a Southern Front in Nicaragua, and when he found out that he had to do everything that the CIA wanted him to do. He wasn't going in there to liberate Nicaragua. He was going in there to work for the CIA. He refused to start the Southern Front. And he called a press conference. And there was something like 50 newspaper people there. And a bomb was planted at this news conference to kill everybody. Well, this man came in with a camera case and put this camera case full of explosives under the table where, what's the girl's name? Aiden Pastora, yeah. Pastora came in, sat down, started the press conference, and this man who put the camera case down there weaseled his way out the door. A girl came in and she brought a cup of coffee in to Aiden Pastora, and she accidentally hit this aluminum box of camera case and knocked it over on its side. Well, if you know anything about C4 explosive, they call a shaped charge. They can make it blast in any direction they want. And since the box fell over on its side, when it blew up and down rather than across the room. And it only killed about 8 people, and it didn't kill Aiden Pastora. And this was the basis of the Christic Institute's lawsuit against the government for drug trafficking and assassination out of Central America, which is very parallel to Colonel Greitz's story of drug trafficking and drug running and assassination in Southeast Asia. So when I went to see Colonel Greitz in 1988, we brought him this information and these tapes, and he was amazed to find out that these left-wing Christic Institute, which was financed by the KGB was saying the same thing that the right-wing Bill Gates was saying that was sponsored by the CIA, you know. But these people, Shackley and Kleins, were also instrumental in setting up the California Specialized Training Institute, CSTI, at Camp San Luis. To go a little bit into the history of this, Ronald Reagan was very upset with the protesters in the Vietnam War, the guys that went out and burnt their draft cards and went to Canada. And, you know, Ronald Reagan was a big hero in every war there ever was. You've seen him on the screen in World War II uniforms, World War I uniforms, Civil War uniforms, the Indian Wars, everything. You know, he was a veteran of every war. So he thought it was very unpatriotic that these young men didn't want to go to Vietnam and get their arms and legs blown off for the main product of coming out of Southeast Asia, which was heroin. So he set up this California Specialized Training Institute to deal with protesters. Well, shortly after, there was a book written in 1968 called The Man Who Cried I Am. It was fiction. It was written by a man named John Williams. John Williams came across the paper called The King Alfred Plan. The King Alfred Plan was a paper written up. It was an operation to set up martial law in the United States and to round up 20 million blacks and incarcerate them into 10 detention centers all around the United States, and then to systematically eliminate them. And the paper is supposedly authentic. Where it came from, no one seems to know. The author tried to get it published. He couldn't get it published. Nobody would touch it, because it listed all the major offices of the federal government being involved in it. So he wrote this novel about this black man, and it was fiction. And he incorporated this King Alfred plan into the novel. Well, Louis Giafreda, who was a colonel in the army, he saw this and he submitted it as his thesis at the U.S. Army War College at Carlisle, Pennsylvania, to get his doctorate or his master's, I don't know which. I don't know who wrote it. I don't believe Louis Giafreda wrote it, because it came out of this novel. But anyhow, Ronald Reagan was so thrilled with this plan to eliminate 20 million blacks that he made Louis Giafreda the head of the California Specialized Training Institute at Camp San Luis, which is, I could throw a rock across the hill and hit. Right near my house. He set this up to deal with protesters and dissidents. In the inauguration of the CSTI, Ronald Reagan, as governor, made this speech, and he said, someone listening to us today would think that we are planning an overthrow of the U.S. government. Ha, ha, ha. The Vietnam War ended, and CSTI, as originally started as a anti-terrorist squad, it was set up to deal with dissidents. Now, there were a lot of other dissidents. You remember all the people that protested nuclear power at Diablo Canyon, and you remember a lot of the black people that were dissidents with SLA, the Uhuru Group, many of them, though. And they could use the same people to control the dissidents for these other things. At Diablo Canyon, when all the flower children and their babies, and we had older people. We had Ian McMillan. I walked with him on one of those marches, and I wore my Marine Corps hat and everything just to show you that all Marines ain't stupid. But I walked with Ian McMillan. He was, I think he was almost 80 at the time. And he was the ultra-conservative. Not in the way that you would think of a conservative as ultra-right-wing. He was ultra-conservative in his ranching methods in San Luis. He would leave habitat for the quail. He would grow certain plants that would be more prone to grow in arid areas. And there were, I've seen pictures of his ranch and the ranches next to him. And the ranches next to him would be like deserts, and his would have vegetation all over him, and there would be quail running all over and flowers growing all over. He was the ultimate conservative. And when we got down, we would walk from Avila Beach down to the gates of Diablo Canyon. And if you remember, they made the blueprints backwards, and they had to redo the whole thing. They goofed up the whole thing. I knew people that worked as welders and pipe fitters, and they would come home from work more stoned than they went when they went to work. And they were making $100,000 a year as welders and pipe fitters and stuff like that. And they were heavy users of drugs. And I remember one guy saying, boy, did I screw up today. Man, I really screwed up. But boy, thank God nobody caught it. Anyhow, the CSTI people would be lined up in front of the gate, and they'd all be standing there in their impeccable uniforms and their nightsticks and their helmets with the bubble face shields, protecting against girls, barefoot girls and their children going up and putting flowers in, giving them flowers and stuff. So am I getting off? Let's see. So anyhow, there was another operation that was planned at the same time, and that was the invasion of Nicaragua. They actually intended to invade Nicaragua back in the late 70s, and it was an operation called Operation Night Train, and it was staged in Arizona, and it was staged in Alabama, and it was all ready to go. So they expected a lot of dissidents and protests on that, and this was another reason that CSTI was formed. In 1981, when Reagan went to Washington, D.C., by way of October Surprise, he brought all his friends from San Luis Obispo with him. Louis Giuffrida, who actually was a colonel, but he liked to be called general, he was made head of CSTI. And I guess he screwed up and was replaced by a man named Stickney. I think he's still head of CSTI.
But Stickney is, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. FEMA.
Anyhow,
it's not a lot of difference.
There's been many, many attempts to install CSTI and Federal Emergency Management Agency as martial law in this country.
And let's go one step further. Let's remember, Stickney is a Kissinger man, right out of Kissinger and Associates.
Right. Oh, yes, right. Kissinger's in that group, too. Henry Kissinger was also at the negotiation for bringing the German and Nazi scientists to the United States after World War II. He was a private named, I guess he was in the American Army. His name was Heinz Kissinger, and Heinz in American, in English, is Henry. What I'm mainly trying to tell you about is the San Luis Obispo connection to the New World Order, the one world government. Yes, yes, sir.
Have any of your investigative tentacles crossed paths with British intelligence yet?
The only path I've got goes way back to the British intelligence of World War II. Intrepid William Stevenson, who was based in New York to help set up the OSS, and boy, they were all pro-British, though. And there were several, Stevenson was friends with Dulles and Wild Bill Donovan. Incidentally, there's a Donovan Road in San Luis Obispo, who supposedly supposed to be the ancestors of Wild Bill Donovan. There's also a Donovan Road in Santa Maria. I don't know if that's the same family or not. William Stevenson had people working for him in intelligence. One of them was named Ian Fleming, who wrote the 007 James Bond series of books, and another one was George Orwell, who wrote the 1984 book, which gives you the blueprint for the New World Order. And it, read the book again; it's astounding as time goes by how profound that book is. And George Orwell was a friend of these people, worked in intelligence also. Anyone else have any questions? Yes, ma'am.
Any information about the Robotoid? There wasn't any doubles in the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, yeah, there must have been three or four people that looked just like Lee Harvey Oswald, but I don't know if that was a coincidence or not. No, I don't have too much, I don't have much information on that.
It seemed like in the Robert Kennedy assassination, the decision to take the president's party from the embassy room to the kitchen through a back door behind the speaker's platform was a last-minute decision. And that by itself would prove that Saran Saran didn't murder Robert Kennedy, because he could not have planned the murder, not knowing that the president would be coming that way. Are you familiar with that at all?
I know a little bit about it. I think, I don't know if I started to mention, if I finished mentioning it, there's a good paper on that called by Duncan Harp or Hart, called The Tangled Web also. And it's about 230 pages. Goes into it very detailed. It's very good. Anyone else have a question? Yes?
Do you have a copy of the Twitter film, the undoctored version?
No, I don't. I have, I did a radio broadcast. I got an audio tape of a radio broadcast that I did on January 28th, 2 days before I was arrested and thrown in jail, about Greer, about the Kennedy assassination. And this friend of mine who works for CSTI, his name's blown now anyhow, his name is Terry. He worked with the original Zapruder film, not the good one, but the altered one, which he got out of bootleg out of Canada in 1972. And on the radio broadcast, we had a half a dozen people call, and Terry came into the studio and gave his right name over the air. And we answered a lot of questions. We spent an hour talking about Greer and all the extenuating circumstances, all the people. There were 12 to 15 people in the Warren Commission that talked about shots coming from the car, sounded like firecrackers going off inside the car. It looked like a gun in a Secret Service agent's hand, but they thought he was shooting at the assassin, on and on, which was completely discounted. And one of the main topics of one of our main arguments of the Greer shooting Kennedy proof was that if the government must have the original, perfect, unaltered Zapruder film, the one that you see has had frames taken out of it, the focus has been made fuzzy, and there's airbrushed things in it, and there's still enough information in it to see the gun in Greer's left hand. Now, if the government, if this is false, all the government has to do is release the original perfect Zapruder film, which it's claimed that Greer has both his hands on the steering wheel and he never took his hands off the wheel. This is baloney. All they would have to do is release that film, and we kept repeating this and all through this scenario. That, hey, all they got to do is release the original perfect film. If Greer didn't shoot Kennedy, what have they got to worry about? Nothing.
That's but they slowed down so much, too.
Yeah, well, he just about stopped the car because Clint Hill, the Cadillac following, you know, these cars have running boards on like the old-fashioned cars do, and the Secret Service agents stand on there and hang on, and the Cadillac following with the Secret Service agents standing on the running boards almost plowed into the back of the Lincoln and stopped so abruptly, and Clint Hill actually fell down and got up and climbed onto the back of the Lincoln. So the car couldn't have been moving very fast. And Clint Hill also mentioned something about, sounds like a gun going off inside the car.
What about the shaped charge theory? There was a shaped charge pointed back towards Kennedy, and when it went off, that blew his brains out.
Well, if you know anything about a .45 caliber bullet, a 230 grain bullet traveling about 900 feet per second, it does an awful lot of damage. I don't think you have to have anything more potent than that. And all you got to do is take a hollow point and put a rifle primer inside the hollow point, and you can make it's the simplest thing in the world to make an explosive bullet.
Well, I've worked with these shaped charges, and I figured they had one there on that car, and pointing backwards.
Well, they might have. They didn't need it.
It was just, I did some analysis on some frames. I think I sent a picture to the people here, and the difference between frame 312 is you see the gun and rear's hand. In fact, I got pictures of it in my car. And the bulk of the 45 is forward in a ready-to-fire position. Now, if you know how an automatic pistol works, once the bullet goes off, the top part of the pistol, called the slide, rapidly moves to the rear about an inch or so and ejects the shell and feeds a new one into the chamber. Well, in frame 313, you can see the bulk of the pistol has moved back about an inch or so on the hand, which shows that the difference between the split second between frame 312 and 313, which is about a 16th of a second, which virtually proves it was a 45. There are people that claim it was a gun with like an air gun or something, with a rocket gun or something, with fish toxin. And I don't believe so. I personally think there's a close range of 45 will do a lot of damage. And there's also, I have no argument with the fact that maybe another bullet struck Kennedy at the same time from the grassy knoll. The first one struck him from the grassy knoll. There may have been another one. In fact, I have pictures of a second shot being fired from the grassy knoll, which, if anyone wants to see them later, I'll bring them in.
That's another person you're going to find showing up everywhere where there's anything like this going on, and that's E. Howard Hunt. He's involved in all of it.
There was about a year or so ago, or 2 years ago, there was a big thing going on about Ricky White or Roscoe White being on the police department was one of the gunmen. I don't believe so. I think there may have been two people on that part of the, on the grassy knoll part of Dealey Plaza. There may have been two.
Well, I would remind ones in the room, if you don't remember these stories, I don't want to pick at you, and I don't want you to be annoyed with me when I remind you. You're going to have to keep up on your own lessons. We wrote at great length about the Cotolo instance, and that was back before we started the Tangled Web series. So you're going to have to go back within this own little crew and work your way back through. It isn't that I needed to give something that was never given. It's that you needed the truth sorted out from the myriads of writings that are incorrect. And that's my only purpose. And I would like to keep all of you alive. And therefore, I keep stressing it. We do journals. And we integrate information. Now, if you sent Dorma out to just write a book, she's probably going to write you a cookbook or how to crochet. Or maybe now she may tell you how to raise little birds. But she's not going to tell you about the CIA and who shot the president. And she would be sure to blunder if she walked into a library. Nora goes to the library all the time. You walk in, what do you start gathering? So I don't try, in any sense of the word, to project myself as some all-knowing wizard going to give you good fortune-telling. I want you to look at the valid information that's already presented for you that you don't know about, and look at it in wisdom and reason, and you'll begin to be able to sort out the lies out of all that projected literature of disinformation, because there's a lot of disinformation out there. And this is possibly our only defense with the accusations that come. Number one, I'm not interested in this particular facet of your world except to get you informed. And I would far rather someone like Ray stand here and tell you these things, because valid information is what you need, not some disconnected, disembodied voice that tells you things and then you begin just to wait until that voice tells you the next thing. Well, I'm not here to order your lives. I'm here to give you what there is that I can share with you. And then you have to take these bits and pieces And you have to handle them in a very, very worldly, human type of action. And each of you do have a purpose. And I know that it would be very easy for you to come and say, Commander, I'm...